It sounds like one of those, hey, let's put on a show moments. And the idea grew into the Sun River Music Festival, celebrating its 40th anniversary this year with a handful of concerts at three different venues in Central Oregon. George Hansen is the music director of the Sun River Music Festival. He joins us with details of this year's concerts and the history of the festival, which this year starts Saturday, August 12th at the Tower Theater in Bend. George, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
The history of the festival, I understand, is more than just the history of the festival itself. It goes back to World War II. What can you tell us about Camp Abbott and the Great Hall?
Well, in the early 40s, shortly after America became involved in the war, American engineering, the Army Engineer Corps, realized at some point they're going to have to cross the Rhine River. So they began practicing building bridges, and they started in the area of Sun River because they had lots of small rivers to sort of get started on the engineering. During their free time, the builders built this huge, what was sort of like an officer's mess hall or an officer's club, which we now know as the Great Hall at the Sun River Resort. It's absolutely beautiful, of course, but the fact that it's all made of wood makes it an ideal acoustical environment as well. Therefore, we're blessed with this beautiful place to play right in Sun River.
So who was it who said, hey, the acoustics are pretty good in here?
Well, it was a group of folks. I know that the Jim Putney was in there, a number of other people who are still with the festival, and it goes back 40 years, which is really a remarkable achievement for any arts organization, which is funded primarily by charitable contributions, essentially, to exist without really ever having much of a bobble. It's very, very stable financially, and we're able to focus on creating great performances.
Did anybody know how to put on a music festival at the very, very beginning?
I think it was pretty much on a shoestring. People just got together, and you know, this is, I've worked all over the world. I spent much of my professional career in Germany, where the arts are funded by the government. And what I found so interesting and so really inspiring is that in every American community, the people in that community decide for themselves what sort of cultural life they're going to have. There's no Kaiser, there's no Bonhoeffer, no one who says, here's what you're going to do. Everybody says, here's what we are going to do. And that is exactly what the folks of Sun River did. They chose to have one of the finest, small but very, very compelling and exciting music festivals in all of the country.
Lawrence Leighton Smith was the founding music director, I understand, and did two stints, one of which actually lapped with yours, I guess. You had a chance to work with Larry Smith, is that right?
Well, actually what happened was I had been invited to come in and do one concert. Larry was his health was beginning to fail. And they brought me in to do one concert, and when it turned out that Larry was going to be unable to conduct that summer, which I think was the summer of 2011, the board asked me to do the entire season. So I conducted all the concerts that year on rather short notice, but it worked out well, and that was the beginning of our relationship.
So you stayed. I mean, it could have been the kind of thing you could have walked away from, it sounds like, but you didn't.
Right. Well, I saw the potential, and we've grown the festival. We come very close to selling nearly every seat every year, and we've been growing in ticket sales. Our last year's earned revenue, as it's called, was the highest in the history of the festival, and it's just exciting programming, I think, and also the quality of the musicians who come. There are players from major orchestras all over the country who come to spend 2.5-3 weeks in Sun River. It's partly because of the perfect weather, but it's also because there's a lot of satisfaction in making music at a high level with wonderful colleagues.
Well, you know, I noticed, this is a transient kind of thing. They were just there for five concerts altogether, and I started to think, well, maybe some of the same people play at Brit, but then I realized there's an overlapping weekend, so that's not possible. So how far and wide do you have to range to pull in people for the Sun River Festival?
Well, our concertmaster is from the Phoenix Symphony. One of our horn players finished an extended stint with New York Philharmonic. We've got a number of people from Portland and Eugene, of course, more locally. Principal flutist is principal flute in the Minnesota Orchestra. These are all major performing arts organizations, And we're just lucky to have all these people kind of gravitate to Sun River at a very special time.
We're talking to George Hansen, the music director of the Sun River Music Festival, which rolls out this year's program with the first concert at August 12th at the Tower Theater in Bend. You can join our conversation on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So three venues now, not just the Great Hall at Sun River.
That's right. Well, the Great Hall is under a lot of pressure just because everybody wants to be in there. So we're sort of dipping our toe in the water for a couple of other places. But the Bend, the Church of the Nazarene, as it turns out, has also spectacular acoustics. And that's going to be, it'll be our first time in there, Classic 2, which is Wednesday, August 16th, where we have two great choral works. We're honoring our concert, or our chorus master. Clyde Thompson has been with the festival, and he's been a feature of Central Oregon, the choral music world, for a number of decades, and he's decided to start taking it a little easier going forward. So we're honoring him with his choice, which was Mozart's Requiem, but I couldn't allow him to end his career on such a sad and dour note. We're going to put that on the first half of the program, and then we'll finish with Beethoven's Choral Fantasy, which also features a chorus and soloists and pianist, and it's a thrilling work, sort of very reminiscent of his Ninth Symphony. That'll be a great way to test out this new acoustic and to honor our wonderful chorus person.
The pianist you're talking about, is that Sean Chen?
Sean Chen, yes. We've had him several times. He is one of the most popular artists we've ever had. If you've heard him play, you probably remember feeling like the guy in that, what was that commercial with he's sitting in a chair and the speaker system is in front of him and his hair is blowing back. Oh gosh, what were the name of those speakers? I don't know. I'm dating myself here.
I think it was a TDK ad.
Yeah, something like that. And that's the way it's, when he's playing, you feel like you're being blown back in your chair and you have to straighten your hair. It's absolutely thrilling virtuosity, and he's going to be in residence for virtually the entire festival. His wife will join us in the violin section, so we're going to take advantage of him. We're going to have him twice on the classic series, plus he'll do a piano recital.
Let's actually hear a little of Sean Chen. We grabbed a chunk of Sean Chen playing the Beethoven Hammerklavier Sonata. So in addition to blowing your hair backwards, he can make you lean in close and listen to the soft, sweet notes. He's quite a highly reputable player, apparently.
Yes, he's won a number of prizes, but the great thing about him is his personality. He did a terrific encore, one of the concerts in the last couple of years, where he asked for five random notes played by random instruments in the orchestra, and then he improvised an entire musical composition on those five notes. In the style of Rachmaninoff. It was absolutely breathtaking.
Wow.
To hear somebody do that.
That does sound amazing. So as you craft a concert and decide what the elements will be, I mean, obviously you got the players in mind, but what other sorts of what sorts of corners do you try to hit when you're making a classical concert?
Well, usually a number of factors come into play. First, we find the cornerstones of the summer. For example, Sean's residency, the choral honoring Clyde and the choral works. But then we'll take, usually it all boils down to meaningful programming. For example, our first concert this year is drawing from the repertoire from the very first concert from 40 years ago. The primary work in both that program and this August 12th program of this year is Mozart's Symphony No. 36 in C major, the Linz Symphony. And we're going to draw that parallel from 40 years ago with one of Mozart's greatest, most exciting, relatively short, but nonetheless very mature work. We start with Rossini's La Gazzaladra because it's a great opener. We feature Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto with our wonderful concertmaster, Stephen Merkel, tremendous asset to the festival. We're lucky to have him. And in between, we're going to put a piece that by Kip Winger. Rock and roll fans know him as the former bass player to Alice Cooper and, of course, the founding star of the group Winger, which had quite a run in the 80s as a real rock and roll band.
Well, in fact, we have a clip from Winger from back in those days. So let's hear a clip of them doing Headed for a Heartbreak. Nope, the other one. So let's try this again. Here we go.
Writing an educational kid's book is hard.
We're looking for the Sun River Winger clip.
I can think.
So, yeah, that is the Kip Winger. That Kip Winger is the one who wrote this piece we're talking about coming up in the Classical One concert?
Yes, indeed. That's Kip singing and writing. He composed that piece along with all of their hit songs. 17 was a huge hit, although a little bit controversial, as I recall.
No doubt.
She's Only 17 is the line that started getting things a little bit. But Kip has become he just was nominated and won a Grammy for his classical compositions. So he is truly a rising star in the world of classical composition, and he wrote an absolutely beautiful piece and has graced us with the honor of being the first to perform it live. And it's a beautiful piece. It's fitting because, of course, many of the people who founded our festival all those years ago are no longer with us. We lost several people just in the last year. So I asked Kip if we could have his piece as a premiere called Parting Grace. Mm-hmm. It's in the vein of, say, Barber's Adagio, but it's brand new, and it features, again, concertmaster and principal cellist in sort of a beautiful duet.
So we now have a clip of that, too. We have a little clip of Parting Grace that we want to let the folks hear, too. So it's a little hard to believe that this is the same guy who sang Headed for a Heartbreak, but, you know, people have musical talents, they have musical talents, and they can apply them anywhere, clearly.
The great thing about Kip, too, is that he'll be coming for the performance. He'll be in the audience, and he may say a word or two about the piece, although it's not necessary. It speaks for itself, as you can see. It's peaceful. It's honoring of the people who are no longer with us to enjoy these concerts. But they sort of live on with this beautiful music.
George, when I was asking about George Hansen, by the way, is the music director of the Sun River Music Festival and our guest here on The Exchange. When I was asking about how you construct a concert, how much do you take the individual acoustics of the venue in mind? Because you got the Tower Theater in Bend for Classical 1, you got the Church of the Nazarene for Classical 2, and Classical Concerts 3 and 4 at the Great Hall at Sun River. Do you pick things that you think might sound better in each of them?
The short answer to that is yes. I'll give you a macro answer. In my 20 years as music director of the Tucson Symphony Orchestra, I never programmed Bruckner. The reason being, despite my deep affection for his music, we didn't have a concert hall that was suitable. Bruckner wrote, speaking of Linz, I mean, he was an organist composing with the acoustic of a great stone cathedral in mind, where you'd have decays of 8 and 10 and maybe even 12 seconds where you can still hear the resonance of a noise. That some people call it echo, but it's a reverberance. His music simply is not suitable for acoustics that are not extremely, well, some people would call them live. I would say it's less critical when you're dealing with chamber music. However, you will not see Tchaikovsky symphonies, for example. Those are simply too large for our group, and typically they would overpower the size of room, even without respect to the reverberance. So I guess that's a couple of ways to answer that question.
Great answers. I mean, I always wondered, and the answer is yes, as you pointed out, but I appreciate the colors to it, too. You were talking about the differences in how in how arts are supported, because you have spent much time in Germany. I wonder if that has changed. I mean, since the fall of the Berlin Wall, if public support for the arts is somewhat less in Europe than it used to be, or at least in Germany.
Well, it's very interesting, and actually it warrants quite a long conversation. I'll try to avoid starting one. But the biggest thing is, on the one hand, you're not dependent on ticket sales. On the other hand, if ticket sales don't go well, you start to get political pressure. For example, my board of directors in a German opera house, which I ran for 6 years, is called in Wuppertal, which is quite a substantial, several tens of millions of dollars in budget every year, and 150 performances. My board of directors was essentially the city council. So while we didn't depend on ticket sale dollars, we did depend on it politically. And there are all kinds of other interesting dynamics that come into play when basically the state funds and is responsible for the running of the arts. You'll also notice something interesting, which is that in German politics, it's the liberals who want to reduce the budget for the opera house, and the conservatives who want to increase it.
That's a bit of a difference. That's interesting how politics end up playing in it one way or the other. But congratulations on reaching a 40th anniversary season at the Sun River Music Festival. The concerts are Classical 1, Saturday, August 12th at the Tower Theater. Classical 2, Wednesday, August 16th at the Bend Church of the Nazarene. The Pops Concert, August 18th at the Bend Church of the Nazarene. Classical Concert 3, August 20th at Sun River Resort Great Hall. And Classical Concert 4, Wednesday, August 23rd, also at the Sun River Resort Great Hall. George Hansen, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate hearing you today on The Exchange.
Thank you very much.
All right, take it easy. That'll do it for this Hour of the Exchange. We have a very principled boy, a story about a spy in Hour 2 coming up.